The ascending close. Very, very powerful close. It's called the part-by-part close or the automatic close. And what it requires is a series of questions, each one which leads into the other, and each one requiring a yes answer. The Encyclopedia sales presentation is one of the most brilliant ascending closes ever designed. Now, I've never sold encyclopedias, but some people have. And they spent $250,000 developing that presentation. It has 42 questions, and every question is answered yes. And the questions start off from the most general to the most specific, but each one more narrowly qualifies the prospect as being interested and capable of buying. For instance, they'll come up to a house, and the first question they ask, they knock on the door, the person answers, they say, "Hi, do you live here?" "Yes." Very good question, isn't it? Because if the person is just visiting, there's no point in starting a presentation. Then the second thing they say is, "We're doing an educational survey in this neighborhood. May I ask your opinion on a couple of questions?" People love to give their opinion. They say, "Well, sure, shoot, go ahead." That's the second yes. Then they say, "Do you believe in the value of higher education?" Now, anybody except a fool says yes. So they say yes, and that's the third yes. They say, "If a company were to want to place a free set of encyclopedias in your living room, would you have any interest in doing that as a public relations gesture or something like that?" And the person hears the word, that magic word, free, free, free. They say, "Well, yeah, I might be interested in doing that if it was free." They say, "Okay," and they write that down, yes. They say, "Well, could I come in and let me show you just exactly what we would be placing in your living room?" And they say, we don't sell these encyclopedias. What we do is we like to place them in your living room so that when your neighbors come around and see these encyclopedias, and all we'd ask is that if they ask you where you got them, you tell them you got them from us and that refer them to us so that we can come by and show them the encyclopedias for their houses." He says, "Well, that's fair enough. If anybody asks me, I'll tell them where I got them, sure." We'll say, "Fine, thank you very much." And that's another yes, and it goes on and on. Pretty soon, the person has bought $1,500 worth of encyclopedias. They paid $500 down. They signed up for the yearbook for 10 years. They've got a globe. They've got a bookcase. They've got sports encyclopedias, children's encyclopedias. They've got nature encyclopedias, science encyclopedias. And the guy has said yes so many times that he looks like one of those little dogs in the back windows of the cars saying yes, yes. And he goes home and he leads the salesperson to the door, and the salesperson's smiling, and he's saying yes, yes, yes. And he says yes, yes. And he waves goodbye, yes, yes. And the person is out of sight, and he's still saying yes. He's nodding like that for about the next 2 or 3 hours before he realizes that he's just bought $1,500 worth of books. It's one of the most powerful presentations because of the suggestive power of an affirmative answer. If you can ask a series of yes questions, and the ideal number is six, there seems to be a law of six in selling, a law of six in promotion, a law of six in objections, a law of six. If you can ask six yes questions at the beginning of your presentation, it's very, very hard thereafter for the person to say no. If you can ask six yes questions that are yes to the benefits that your product or service offers, and the person says, "Would you be interested in this?" "Yes." "Are you interested in saving money?" "Yes." "Are you interested in higher profits?" "Yes." "Are you interested in decreasing your costs?" "Yes." "Are you interested in more efficient methods?" "Yes." If the person will say, same question, you see, phrased six different ways, if the person says yes six times, from then on they're into yes. If you like, they're stuck like in a broken record. It takes a lot of silly questions on your part to get them to say no. So ask them six yes questions at the beginning of the presentation, and you will be astonished at how interested they are, because every time we ask a yes question, the person's desire goes up. Every yes increases desire. Every no decreases desire. The difference is yes is like throwing fuel on the fire, and no is like throwing water on the fire. So every time you ask a yes question, the desire goes up. Every time you ask a no question, the desire goes down. So even with your positive questions, don't say you don't want to waste any more money on this than you possibly have to, referring to some other product. Don't get them to say no, because no sets them off in a different groove. Say you want to save as much money on this product as possible, don't you? Yes, yes, yes. And the ascending close is the most powerful that I've ever seen. Virtually all life insurance, all professional products, educational products, mutual funds, stock brokering services, banking services, and most every sophisticated company, right down to or up to and including vacuum cleaners, sells on the ascending close presentation. Starting from a logical point, you move through it. And a certain point, by the way, in an ascending close presentation, the person will say, I'll take them. How much are they? How much do they cost? How do I get them? Will you take a check? If you ask enough yes questions, the person finally reaches the point where they say, I'll take it. Let me give you a simple example of how that's true. Every time we say yes to a benefit, our desire to enjoy the product or service goes up. What if I were to describe a restaurant to you? I say, I'd like to tell you about a new restaurant I just went to. And you say, well, okay, sure, I'd like to hear about it. You say, now, if you're interested in going to this restaurant, you just let me know. But let me tell you some of the things about it. Well, first of all, it was started by a multimillionaire who likes to give food away. And there's not a dish in the restaurant for dinner or lunch that sells from over $5. There's over 300 different dishes, including cooking from six different lands, including prime rib and Chateaubriand and something like 26 different types of fresh seafood. Now, this person who owns this restaurant has done it in beautiful decor. It has waterfalls. It has beautiful waitresses running around. It has running water and waterfalls. It has plants and peacocks and parrots and birds and monkeys. It has a wine list of something like 250 different bottles of wine. Not one of them does he charge more than $3 a piece for. It's right in the center of town, and they have free valet parking. As a matter of fact, if you don't have a car, they'll send a car for you. Now, about at which point in this description are you going to say, okay, that's enough. Where is it? I want it. How do I get a reservation there? Somewhere around here, you're going to say, that's enough. I've heard enough. Isn't that right? When you're talking in terms of benefits of your product or service for somebody, and you're talking about them enthusiastically and logically and in articulate fashion, eventually it reaches the point, if this person is a prospect at all, where they say, well, wait a minute, how can I get this? And that's when you say, well, doggone it, and you go into your close. But the more logical the ascending close presentation, the faster you'll be able to sell. The invitational close is very important. At the very least, at the end of a sales presentation, you should issue a direct or indirect invitation to buy. One of the most powerful, and I really like it, is, why don't you give us a try? Why don't you give us a try? Or, why don't you take it? Or you can say, why don't you give it a try? Now, this is a very powerful close because the answer to it is one of two things. They'll say, well, sure, why not? Or they'll say the reason why they won't give it a try, which gives you an opportunity to answer the reason and continue selling. When you say, why don't you give it a try, you're suggesting that it's really not a permanent decision. It's like a sample. If you're talking about selling a service to a company, you say, why don't you give us a try for this particular need that you have? They say, all right, we'll give you a try. What they're saying is, we're going to buy your services. But when you say, give us a try, it makes it easy to make that kind of a decision. And some of the other invitational closes, you're showing somebody something, a car, furniture, a machine, you're demonstrating, and you just say to them, why don't you take it? Do you like the size? Do you think it would be of some help to you here? Do you think it's an improvement on what you're doing already? He says, yeah, why don't you take it? And in many cases, the person will say, why not? Well, sure, why not? And you just pull it out and start filling out the order form. When would you like to take delivery is another invitational close. Do you like what I've showed you so far, Mr. Prospect? Oh, yeah, I like it. When would you like to take delivery? Now, the person has to say the date that they'd like to take delivery, or approximately, or they have to give you a reason or a concern or a question that they still have that's holding them back from making a decision. What color, size, or quantity would you like? Would you like a dozen right away, or would you like two dozen? Would you like it in blue, or would you like it in green, or so on? Would you like us to start on this right away, especially if it's a consulting contract or something like that? Would you like us to start on this right away? Then they have to say, yes, I would, or, well, just a second, and ask you another question. In any case, you're keeping control of the sales conversation by asking an invitational close. Or another example is, are you in a rush, or would Tuesday be all right? And they'll say, well, Tuesday would probably be all right, fine. The deal is closed, and you go on with it from there. But never let a sales presentation end without offering or giving an invitation to make a buying decision right now. We all have problems with price, and we're going to talk now about overcoming price resistance. I have been through every single situation that you have ever dreamed of with regard to price resistance, and I'd like to give you the best points that I've been able to find. First of all, nobody can ever afford the price the first time it's mentioned. And the reason for this is simply because of the law of exclusion, if you like, or the law of the excluded alternative. Whenever we buy anything, because the amount of money we have is limited, it cuts out all the other things that we could buy with that same amount of money. And since we value freedom very highly, the freedom of being able to choose, Sometimes we hold back from buying something just so we retain the flexibility. And when the price comes up, no matter what the price is, people almost instantaneously say, I can't afford it. It's always more than they expected to pay. It's always contrary to what they wanted. We had a situation not long ago where our seminar, we were marketing it for $295 per person, and we had people call up and say they wanted to go to the seminar that was $2.95 for the weekend. And even then, they were asking for a discount. Of course, there's nothing much you can do with those people, but the thing is that when the price first comes up, people will always be surprised. So you must soften the blow of price. The second point with regard to price is that willingness to pay and ability to pay are two different things. Nobody's ever willing to pay. Nobody ever wants to pay money out. But whether or not they can is totally different. Most people can. They can find the money if they really want the product badly enough. But whether they're willing to or not is a different thing. The way that you increase the willingness to pay is by increasing the heat of buying desire, by talking more and more about the values and benefits of the product or service, because the more the person wants it, the less concerned they become about the price. Your job is to convince the customer that the value of the product is far greater than the cost. In other words, the satisfactions they're going to get, or the increment in satisfaction, is going to be far more than the cost is. So don't talk about price wherever you can possibly avoid it. Always talk about benefits. Now, one of the things which is very helpful, I would call people up and I would say, I'd like to talk to you about such and such. They'd say, how much is it? Do you ever get this? They don't even know what it is, what grade of quality, what service. They don't know anything about it. And if you give them a price, what do they say to you? I'm sorry, I can't afford it. Isn't that true? They don't even know what you've got to offer. But how much is it? I'm sorry, I can't afford it. And this is the reason for that. There's only one common denominator in our society that we all agree on, that is standard across all transactions, and that is the monetary unit. We can all identify with the monetary unit. No matter what the product or service is, or the person or the company, we don't know, but monetary unit we can identify, just like the weather. Why do you think people talk about the weather? Because everybody can relate to the weather. So the first thing people ask when they're trying to get some information is, how much is it? And if you answer that question with the dollar price, they almost invariably say it's too much because they don't have any value to compare it against, and you're dead in the water. Starting off swimming from that point of view is very, very difficult. So this is what I say when a person says, how much is it? I say, Mr. Prospect, if it's not exactly right for your situation, there's no charge at all. Now, may I ask you a couple of questions? And I go straight into a series of questions to find out whether or not my product or service can be of any help to them. In other words, I kick the chair out from under price right at the beginning. I refuse to talk about price at the beginning unless the person has a thorough understanding of what the product or service is. Very, very important. Price resistance is simply how the prospect tells you that you haven't given him enough evidence that the benefits will outweigh the price. Never argue price. The prospect says, boy, that's a lot. You say, yes, Mr. Prospect, it's not cheap. However, there are very good reasons for the price, and I would like to explain some of them to you. There are very good reasons why thousands of people have examined this product carefully and compared it with our competitors and decided to pay more and buy this product. Would you like to know what they are and get back to talking about value? If it is a high price, if you're the highest price on the market, you say, yes, Mr. Prospect, we are the highest price supplier of this product or service in the market. And we are busier today than we have ever been. Would you like to know why so many people are using our services even though we charge more? And the person will almost invariably say, yes, why? Because, and these are the benefits and values that you get. It's so logical, simple. You go into a high fashion woman's store and a woman looks at a dress and it's $800. And she says, my, that's a lot of money. And if the clerk comes up and says, yes, and you want to know why that's so expensive, and explains the stitching and the seams and the material and the lining and so on, and who made it and who's wearing it and where it was designed. When they explain all that, it doesn't seem to be that expensive. It's still high, but it doesn't seem to be that expensive. So 7 points on handling price objections. First of all, don't mention price until the customer asks the price. Do not bring up price at the beginning. If a person says, well, that looks like an interesting product, how much is it? Say, could I come to that in just a second? That's the good part. That's one of the things I say, hey, that is the good part. Could I come to that in just a second? I just want to go over one or two more things quickly. and then come to the price. Put the price off and bring the price into the conversation where you want to bring it in. In my sales presentations, I have a specific place where price appears. And at that point, either the customer says, oh, by the way, how much is it? Or I say, I'll bet you'd like to know how much it's going to cost. But it doesn't come up until that point. And if it does, I put it off. So number two is always focus your presentation on the value he receives, not on the money you receive. Talk about what he's getting rather than what you're getting. Always justify the price with sound reasons. Always explain why it costs this much. Never discuss price without mentioning value and benefits at the same time. If a person says, well, how much is this machine? Don't say, this machine is X number of dollars. What you say is, this machine, including this, this, and this, plus these attachments, plus 90 days warranty and a supply of 1,000 sheets of paper, will cost you X number of dollars per month, or whatever it happens to be. In other words, always precede the price by restating the value that the person is going to get as a result of paying that price. Remember, intensified buying desire reduces price sensitivity, which is another way of saying the more they want it, the less they care about the price. And your job is to increase how much they want it, not to argue over the price. Compare the price with more expensive articles. When a person says that costs too much, a perfect answer is compared with what, Mr. Prospect? Sometimes they don't know what they're talking about. They have no idea what things cost. They may not have bought one of these for 5 years and don't realize that the price has gone up 200%. You say, compared with what? Well, you could say, well, compared with ABC's product. Mr. Prospect, ABC's product in the same line is $275 more than ours is. As a matter of fact, here's their recent price sheet. You have to find out what they're comparing you with. If you say, this is a Mercedes automobile, geez, that costs a lot. Compared to what? Compared to a Honda. That's true, but there are very, very distinct differences why it costs so much more. Would you like to know what they are? So always compare apples to oranges. And one of the things which I suggest that you do, whatever your product is, take products that are selling for more than yours and be sure you know what their price structure is. When a person says, geez, that's expensive, you say, Mr. Prospect, here are our major competitors and here's what they're charging. And they're charging this and this and this, which is even more than what ours are. So based on a competitive market, ours is very favorably priced. Number seven is stretch the price over the life of the product, which is a very, very good way to do it. The person says, well, geez, that costs a lot. You say, it costs $300 more than the other machine. But Mr. Prospect, this machine has a 5-year life. That works out to about $60 a year more, which works out to about $2 a month more for all of the additional quality accessories and facilities that are built into it. Is it worth $2 a month more is basically the question, which comes out to approximately 6 cents a day more. Is it worth 6 cents a day more to have all these features involved? The more you stretch the price over the life of the product, the smaller it appears to be. And one other point, one other thing which you can do is compare it with things like buying a package of cigarettes. It's the equivalent to so many packages of cigarettes. Or break it down into single unit prices. This is how much it costs per day. Now, some of the ways of handling money and price objections. First type of money and price objection you receive is, we can't afford it right now, business is bad. Everybody says that. Even in the booms, people say that. The reason they say it in the booms is they got into the habit of saying it in the busts. And they said it so many times that as soon as the price comes up, they look up and they say, we can't afford it now, business is bad. They don't even know how bad or how good business is. You just simply realize that it's rarely true. When a person says that, it means that you haven't given them enough reasons to buy. The desire hasn't been aroused enough. Number two, short of cash. If a person says, well, we're short of cash, you say, what if? And this is a powerful expression to smoke out a real objection. What if we could offer you terms? What if? Dot, dot, dot. Very good question. What if we could give you terms? What if we could take yours as a trade so no cash need to change hands? What if we could do this? What if we could do that? If the person says, well, maybe, or yes, it means that they're interested, they're looking for a way to do it. And this is where your creativity takes place. When I got my car, my ideal car, silver gray 450 SEL Mercedes, when I first was offered the car, even though I'd wanted it hungrily for about 2 or 3 years, I said, no, there's no way I could afford it. I'm sorry, I'm not in the market. And they said, just a second. He said, what if we could take your car as trade so there's no cash? I said, I couldn't afford the rest of the price. They said, what if we could finance it all for you? I said, well, keep on talking. They took my car in trade. They financed the whole thing through one of their banks, spread the payments over 5 years, and my cost after taxes for that beautiful, beautiful automobile was $125 a month. In other words, there's always ways to do it. We have to be creative. And they just showed me how if you depreciate it, you deduct the interest and so on and so forth. There's all kinds of ways that you can afford to buy a very expensive item. Budget limitations. Person says, well, we don't have it in the budget. Our budget is used up. You say, well, I'll tell you what. If you take it now, we won't bill you until your next budget period. How is that? If they're sincerely interested, if they really want it, they'll say, hey, well, that's not a bad idea. And you could take something else in trade or a minimal down payment or something else. Or offer them a cheaper product. Or try to get their budget expanded. If the price is above the customer's expectation, which it always is, say, well, that's more than we expected to pay. You say, well, yes, Mr. Prospect, but you know you always get what you pay for. Did you ever get anything cheap that was any good? You know that in a highly competitive market that we're selling this for the rock bottom lowest price that we possibly can. And if you want a good quality product that's going to last you and do the job for you, sometimes maybe you'll have to flex your budget somewhere else and get the money somewhere else. The customer thinks your product is too expensive. Be willing to show your customer that your product in comparison with what else is available in the market is very fairly priced. Don't assert it. There's an old rule which I cannot overemphasize. It says, salesperson's assertions are not proof. They are just assertions. We know that we would never lie, right? But nobody else knows that. They're accustomed to believing that perhaps we will put the very best light on our product and maybe even cross that invisible line, if you like, in order to sell it. So when we say, no, this is very fairly priced, it doesn't mean anything. But if we present a price comparison from a recent newspaper or magazine or price sheet from our major competitors, that is overwhelming evidence. That's why when we say, oh, you'll be very happy with this product, they say, oh yeah, I'm sure I would. And you say, here's a letter from one of our happy customers in your business who had the same concerns that you did. That carries weight because it's proof, if you like. Describe the price of your product, as we said earlier, by breaking it down to its lowest common denominator. Break it down, compare it with a package of cigarettes. Some people compare products to a case of beer a week or something like that. A bottle of wine a week, if you like. One dinner out per night or per month. A competitor price comparison. When a person says that your competitor sells it for cheaper than you, anybody get that? We hear that all the time. It's amazing where our customers get so much information on the market out there if they're not in the market for the product. They know everything that's going on in the market. Everybody is selling it cheaper than we are. You say, yes, ours is more expensive than our competitors. Would you like to know why? And then go on and explain, these are the reasons why. Routine objections on the basis of price. The person says, well, geez, I didn't really expect it would cost that much and so on. You say, well, Mr. Prospect, you're right. It is a little bit more than you thought, but there are very good reasons for it, and keep talking about the advantages and benefits and the things it would do. Normally, you'd expect to pay this amount. If you bought it from X company, their lowest model costs this amount and so on. This is very fairly priced under the circumstances. Procrastinating on the buying decision. We all have dealt with customers that keep putting us off and putting us off and putting us off. They procrastinate. They don't say yes and they don't say no. They're thinking about it, they're talking it over with someone, they're going over it with their accountant and so on. Has anybody dealt with this where we go on and on and on? This is called the end of the trail close or the sudden death close. And what you do is you take the filled out sales contract. You already know what the person is going to buy or not buy. You know who it is, you know the company. You fill out the whole sales contract, have it typed out so it looks very professional, and you take it to them and you say, Mr. Prospect, either this is a good idea and you ought to go ahead with it, or it's not a good idea and you ought to forget it. But one way or another, why don't we make a decision right now so that I can stop taking up your time on these visits? And then you go completely silent, you slide the contract over to them, you put a tick mark, not an X, but a tick mark next to the signature place, put your pen on top of it and sit perfectly silently and wait. And don't say a word. In 60% of cases, after some period of tension, the person will say, ah, well, we might as well get on with it and we'll sign it. In 40% of cases, the person will say, no, I don't think we'll take it, and they would never have bought it anyway. But in either case, you're free of having to keep going back over and over again to this incomplete sale, which is starting to exasperate you. And some of the other things that you could say, which are very good with regard to price, they say, well, geez, I don't know if we could afford that. You could say, well, what would we have to do to make a deal today? It's a very good question. One of the most powerful closing questions. Mr. Prospect, how far apart are we here? I had a friend who is a landscape architect, and he did a proposal for a contractor, a very expensive home. The contractor told him that he wanted the very cheapest price possible and that He was going to go with the cheapest price, and the landscape architect wanted the work, so he sat down and he put a very sharp pencil to his proposal, and he came down with all the requirements that the contractor had, and he said, it's going to cost $7,025. And the contractor said, absolutely not. Nope, no way, I'm not doing it. That's far beyond what I expected to pay. That's out of the ballpark. I'll go without landscaping if it's necessary. Very, very adamant. He said, well, how much were you expecting to pay? Because he couldn't see how he could possibly reduce the price based on the specifications he'd been given. I am not paying a penny more than $7,000. He said, as a matter of fact, he said, if we reduce the size of two of these plants, we'll put it in for $6,995. Done. And they went ahead with the transaction. You never know how far apart you are, you see, unless you ask, how far apart are we on this deal? Sometimes the person will say, well, geez, the most that we could possibly think of spending would be X number of dollars. Sometimes you can reduce the size or quantity or quality or price or delivery or shipment or warranty or something else to get it into that price range, but you can't do that unless you ask them how far apart you are. And again, you can ask, is the price your only concern, Mr. Prospect? Is the price your only concern? And that also gets them to take a stand. In other words, is it only price that's holding you back from buying? If it is, then let's see if we can wheel on price. If it isn't price, if it's something else, then let's get that out on the table too. All right, we're talking about closing techniques. And these closing techniques, along with the ones that we've introduced up to now, are some of the simplest, the most popular, and the most powerful closing techniques that have ever been developed. And it is up to you to think them through and think how you can use each one of them with your product. You should be able to close 10 different times and use 10 different techniques on the basic objections that you get and with the type of people that you deal with. The secondary close, very popular close. This close involves closing on a minor point in the sales presentation, acceptance of which denotes acceptance of the entire offer. In other words, the person is looking at a refrigerator or a stove or a consumer durable, and you say, would you be wanting this in blue or green? Would you be wanting this delivered or would you want to take it with you? Which is a secondary consideration. It's not, are you going to take it, yes or no, but how are you going to take it with you? It's focusing the customer's attention off of the major buying decision, relieves the stress and pressure of saying yes or no, and gets it focused on something else. Would you be wanting the regular tires or the radials? You're showing a car to a person. Person can't decide whether or not they're going to take the car. You say, well, with this car, would you want the regular tires or the radials? If the person says, well, I'd want the radials, they've decided to go ahead with it. You will say, well, let's see if we can get this written up right now and get the tires changed. The pressure of the buying decision is passed, and now it's going on to wrap up the details. The alternative close is a very good close to use. You can use it for 1,000 reasons. It's always giving the customer a choice between something and something. Never a choice between something and nothing. Never say, do you want this or not? So the customer can say either yes or no, but would you like A or B? Would you like one of these or one of those? Would you like a tall one or a short one? Any answer is a yes. Selling past the sale, the assumption close. This close is used to push ahead of events and to assume that the sale has been made, the purchase decision has been made, just to go on to arrange delivery. And you're sitting there and the person hasn't said yes or no, and you said, well, would you like us to deliver this to your home this afternoon or will tomorrow be all right? And the person says, well, if I can get it today, I'd appreciate it. Fine, well, let's put it through right now and just start filling out the documentation. Or another example is, which one will you be taking today? Would you like it gift wrapped? Or the perfect one is, will that be cash or chargex? Or will that be cash or credit card? Whenever they ask you that, it's not whether you're going to be taking it or not, but just how you're going to be paying for it. And go on to wrap it up. The assumption close is very powerful because it helps people get over that moment of indecision. Let me say one more thing with regard to closing, is that when you finish your presentation, you must change and go smoothly into the close. You don't sit there and have a breather, if you like. You don't sit there and rest as though you've just had a round in the ring, if you like, and you're sitting there in opposite corners. As you get to the end of your presentation, you go smoothly into the close, and you know at each step you're going to be bringing out the purchase order or the contract or the proposal or whatever it happens to be. You're going to be giving the person the proposal to sign. You must know where you are. Very much like a stage play. You notice like a stage play or a movie, the climax, the end, the conclusion is very carefully planned, and everything is planned up to it. They don't figure it out anew each time they show the play or play the movie. It's like singing a song. The end of the song is very carefully thought out, and every single singer sings it the same. When you come to a close, you must know exactly where it is and just switch into the close as automatically as you would turn down your own street in a car. The takeaway close is also very powerful. It's a variation on the selling past the sale close or the assumption close. And what you do is when the person is hesitating, you halt the presentation and say, oh, just a minute, before we go any further. This is when the person is obviously hasn't made up their mind. Let's make sure we can get this model for you. Let's make sure we have this in your size. Let's make sure we have it in your color. If you're talking to a businessman, you say, before we go any further, let me call the warehouse and make sure we have this item in stock. We've had a tremendous rush on these the last little while. We may be out. And if the person gives you the permission to call the warehouse, he's decided to buy. A variation of this, too, is let me go and check with my manager and see if we can arrange immediate delivery. Can you wait here for a second? The person will say, sure, you go and check with your manager. Or you could even do it better. You can say, why don't you come with me to my manager and I'll see if we can't arrange immediate delivery. And if the person will come with you to your manager to arrange immediate delivery, which you know you can offer, then they've decided to buy. The takeaway close, by the way, is used on ladies all the time. It's one of the most famous techniques in ladies' boutiques. They say, the woman is hemming and hawing, I don't know if I can afford it, I don't know if my husband will like it, and so on and so forth. The person says, just a minute, before we go any further, let me check and make sure we have it in your size. And if you say yes, check and make sure you have it in my size, you've decided to buy. And you notice they always come back and they have one left in your size? We have just one left, right? They do this to us all the time. When you're looking at buying a car, you say, is this a car you like? They say, well, this one is sold. I'll see if we can get another one of these in. I'll see if there's one coming in on the truck. Can you wait here for a second? They say, oh, yeah, check for me. And they go and check. They say, you're in luck. There's just one. And it's coming in the day after tomorrow. Let's get it written up right now because those people over there, they point to somebody at the other end of the showroom, they're also looking at the same one. And you say, oh, geez. And you don't even know how much you wanted it until they suggest that they're going to take it away. Now, I told you about this, and I told you about this, and how this works, and how this will benefit you, and so on, and go right down the list and say, have we covered everything? You see, each time you itemize a feature and point out the benefit that the customer will enjoy, his desire or her desire to purchase the product goes up. At the end of this, if the customer says, no, I can't think of anything else, you say, well, let's go ahead and write this up right now. When would you like to take delivery? And you just take out your order form and begin filling it out. The summary close is excellent when you make a detailed list of every benefit the customer will ever enjoy from the product, then rank them in order of importance and plan your presentation to introduce them in order. Watch for the one or two benefits that seem to be of greatest interest and repeat them over and over again, as we know. Well, the puppy dog close is another close that sometimes you can use. The puppy dog close sells billions of dollars worth of products every year. And what it involves is letting the prospect touch, taste, feel, hold, try out the product or service. I knew one company that sold office equipment. They sold more office equipment than any other company in the city. And you know how they did it? Very simple. They had one thing. They hired salespeople with little or no experience. It didn't matter. Their job was to go out and talk people into taking their machinery into the office for a week's trial. That's all they did. They had literally hundreds of pieces of expensive equipment. They had a one whole department that did nothing but take the equipment out on trial. They found that if you could just get people to use the machine for a month or a week or even shorter period of time, that the incidence per people who would decide to purchase it rather than do without it was so high, that's all they had to do. They were just basically order takers, and they were fantastically successful. So if you have a product that a person can test drive, can try out, can take home, can use, the puppy dog close comes from the famous ploy of the pet shop owner, who the parents come in, usually against their will, because the children want a puppy. We want a puppy. We want a puppy so badly. We've seen puppies in the movies and puppies in the television. So finally, on Saturday, the parents come down with the children to show them the puppies. And the pet shop owner is no fool. He knows the reluctance. The parents don't want to get stuck with the dog. So he says, look, he said, before you make a decision, why don't you take the dog home, take this beautiful, soft little puppy home for the weekend, and see how it works out. And if you don't like it, you can bring it back on Monday. So they take the puppy home. By the time Sunday afternoon comes, what has happened? The kids have grown tired of the dog and are off doing something else. By Sunday night, the parents have fallen in love with the dog. And Monday, the parents go back and buy the dog and take it home and end up taking care of it. One of the best puppy dog closes I've ever seen was a fellow who sold recreational vehicles, expensive motorhomes, $30,000 and up. And what he would do when he found somebody who was really interested in a recreational vehicle, he would arrange to take them out for lunch to talk to them about the vehicle. But he would pick them up at their home, and he would drive up in a $50,000 motorhome. He would bring them out. He would open the door for them. They'd climb in. They'd sit down. Beautiful. He'd drive them to a park on the edge of the city, overlooking a lake and looking off across the foothills at the mountains. And he'd swing into that park so that the dining table inside the motorhome faced out on this beautiful view. And then he'd open up the microwave, and he'd have food all prepared. He'd have a bottle of wine and ice. He'd open the wine. He'd put glasses on the table. He'd lay out the food on china. And they're sitting there, not a sound, soft stereo music in the back, this beautiful view overlooking the lake, birds flying, the mountains in the distance. He said, "Isn't that beautiful? Now, isn't that what you want?" People sit there, and they have a couple of glasses of wine. They said, "Harry, this is exactly what we want. What are we waiting for? Wouldn't it be nice to be able to do this whenever you wanted? Come home in the evening on a summer day and just go out and park. Or go off on a trip on the weekend and have your own moving home, just like this." He sold more motorhomes than anybody else in his city. Even in depressions, even when interest rates were 21%, he was the highest selling salesman because he gave them an opportunity to feel what the product would be like. So if you have a product that is like that, by all means, do everything possible to give people an opportunity to experience it. The Ben Franklin close is considered by many to be the very best close of all. Everybody's heard of it. I've taught this close in this course many times, and people say, "Oh, there's that old Ben Franklin close." Everybody's heard about the Ben Franklin close. And the reason it's so powerful is this, is that the close involves the thinking process that we always go through before we buy something, which is we weigh the pros and we weigh the cons and we try to come to a decision. Now, most of us do this in a very fuzzy way. We do it all jumbled up in our heads. The Ben Franklin close relates back to Ben Franklin's decision-making method. And you could say like this, "Mr. Prospect, you want to make the best decision in this situation, don't you? And especially if there's a lot of details involved." And he says, "Yes, of course I do." You say, "Well, let's use the Ben Franklin decision-making method." Now, Ben Franklin used to use this to weigh and balance and make good decisions. And he was one of the best decision makers of his time. The first self-made millionaire in America, one of the most famous inventors, politicians, and scholars of his time. And what he would do is he would take a piece of paper, and you take out a piece of paper, draw a line down the center, and on one side you write reasons in favor of going ahead with this decision, and on the other side you write reasons opposed. And you say, "Now let's look at the reasons why this may be of advantage to you." And then you reiterate the reasons in conjunction with him, and you write them down. And you reiterate every benefit that you can think of in your product or service, and you write it down. As a matter of fact, you should probably do this in advance so that you've got it practiced, so that if you ever get into this close, you can use it without any difficulty or hesitation at all. You say, "Now, is that everything?" And you ask the person if he can think of any more. He says, "No, I can't think of any more reasons in favor." You say, "Well, all right, Mr. Prospect, now you fill out the other side," and you hand him the pen and the pad, and you give it to him. And you let him fill out the reasons opposed all by himself. And what he'll do is he'll say, "Well, there's this. There's the price, of course, and there's, we'd have to replace the old machine, and there's this." The very most, the smartest prospect I've ever seen could ever come up with is three. And then you look at it and you say, "Well, Mr. Prospect, it looks like you've made your decision." I had a good friend of mine. I met him on the plane. He's a commercial real estate agent. He was working on a complex real estate deal involving a trade for cash and land and commercial buildings with a large financial institution and a real estate conglomerate. And he said he was sitting down with the vice president. They'd been going back and forth on this for 2 or 3 weeks with the vice president of this financial institution, and they weren't getting anywhere. And finally, he had been through this course. He said, "Well, why don't we use the Ben Franklin decision-making method?" He thought, "What the heck?" He said, "Let's lay out the pros and cons of this for your organization on two sides of a sheet of paper." And he sat down and he went through this exactly like this. And then he said, "Now you write out the reasons opposed." And the executive sat down and wrote 2 or 3, and he looked at both lists. And the salesman said, "Well, it looks like you've made your decision." And he said, "You're right, I have. Let's go with it." And they signed it up. He had just done this the day before. I met him on the plane. He said, "Brian," he said, "I was amazed at how well that worked. It was so simple." He said, "I've heard about it for years, but I had never tried it." He said, "I earned more commission putting that deal together than I earned in the previous year." And it was something like, I think it was $35,000 worth of commission he earned just on that one transaction. Well, another close is the order sheet close. And there's 2 or 3 variations of the order sheet close. But the first one is when the prospect comes in, or when you begin talking with the prospect for the first time, wherever it's possible, you simply take out an order sheet or a sales contract or whatever you use, and start filling it out. The easiest way is to take it out and write the date boldly so the person can see you're writing on the order form. Now, sometimes the person will say, hey, wait a minute. I'm not ready to go ahead yet. I just want to get some information. You say, don't worry about this. I have a terrible memory for details, and I like to write everything down. If you decide not to go ahead today, it'll be all right. We'll just throw the order form away, okay? Okay, and you just keep on writing. Every time the person says, well, probably blue or 2x4, write it down in the order sheet. So the person gets used to seeing you write out the details on the order sheet. Every single time you write one of their details on the order sheet, it becomes personalized for them. It becomes one of their personal possessions. So eventually the person begins to identify with the order sheet, and finally at the end of the sales transaction you say, by the way, what is the exact spelling of your last name? J-O-N-E-S, Jones. Thank you very much. And you just write down the last name and your first name and initial. Once they give you the spelling of the last name, they've decided to go ahead with the order. Many people don't use this close, and I don't know why, because I've used it under very sophisticated conditions to sell hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of investments, and I've always been astonished at how easy it is. Mr. Prospect, what's the exact spelling of your last name? If they give you the spelling of the last name, they've decided to go ahead. And the other variation is simply to take out the order form or the contract or the order blank at the end of the discussion and begin filling it out. Write in the date and say, what is the exact mailing address here? They'll give you the mailing address, they've decided to go ahead. It's as simple as that. It's a very easy way to go from the end of the presentation through the close. And once they've given you either the name or the mailing address, then it's just simply a matter of filling out the rest of the details on the form. The relevant story close. We've talked about this before. The relevant story close is very powerful because people think in terms of stories. And what it simply is a matter of telling a story about a happy client that you have had that followed your advice and was in the same position of hesitancy as your client, the one who's sitting here in front of you, but followed your advice anyway and went ahead with it and bought the product and was very, very happy. Let me give you an example from the insurance industry. I have a friend who's a very successful insurance agent, one of the top in the country, in fact. And he has a statement from the court that processed the estate of a man that was worth $1.5 million. And this statement has the names blanked out and everything. And it shows that this person died with $1.5 million in assets. But by the time taxes and legal fees and probate fees and intestate fees and everything had eaten up this account, his wife was left with $21,000 because he had no insurance. There was capital gains taxes, there was inheritance taxes, there were sales taxes, there were deferred taxes, there were taxes on tax. He said by the time it was over, his wife was left penniless. He died when he was something like 57, his wife was 53, she had $21,000 left for the rest of her life. He said this person thought that because he had this big asset base, he didn't need insurance. And a person says, well, I don't need insurance because I've got assets. They say, well, by the way, you know, there was this fellow in Montana, and this is what happened to him, and they pull this out. Because it's a relevant story, the person can relate to that story. They can say, geez, yes, that might happen to me. Everything might be taken by taxes. It might take 5 years before my wife got any of this money, even if it wasn't taken by taxes. And it's a very, very powerful story to close an insurance policy. When a person is trying to sell a car, when a person is trying to sell blueprint printing services or industrial chemicals or artwork, for instance, we talked about how do you sell art. A person says, well, gee, that's very expensive. You said, yes, good art is expensive, and the only thing that makes it worthwhile buying good art is the speed with which it can appreciate. That if you buy this piece of artwork, there's no guarantee, but it's not uncommon to see a piece of art like this appreciate by 50, 60, 70% in a year. A perfect example is the work of Fafard. Perfect example. From Saskatchewan, making those little statues. 10, 20 years ago, nobody heard about him. Now his statues are literally priceless. I have a friend who bought one for, I think, $600. Now it's worth 10, 20, 30 times that. When you're selling something, tell a relevant story about somebody else who hesitated also, but decided to go ahead and look what happened to them. Or a relevant story about somebody who decided not to buy it and look at what unfortunate consequences ensued. The walkaway close. Now, these three closes are very good, especially in retail. The first of the walkaway closes is that when a person says, well, I'd like to shop around, I'd like to go somewhere else, I'd like to see someone else, I'd like to check your prices with your competition and so on. What you do is you say, look, Mr. Prospect, we've been doing business here for many years. Most of our customers are repeat customers. And many of our customers come from referrals, from repeat customers. And every one of them have shopped all over town before they finally came back here and bought. Now, why put yourself to all that trouble and go all over the place to try to find a better price? Why don't you make a decision right now, and we can wrap it up for you and get it loaded in your car this minute, or we can have it out to you tomorrow morning. You see, there's a very good reason. You must give the person a good reason for not shopping around, not going through those hours of agony, going door to door and pillar to post, trying to find a better price. Give them a good reason, and a logical reason is that everybody who shops here has already done that for you. Why should you go and spend all that time, waste all that time shopping around? Because you'll end up back here anyway, just as our other customers have. Well, let's say that the person says, well, I really still think I should go and check because I'm not sure that this is the best deal and so on. You get people who are shoppers. Then you use an incentive. And the incentive is what is called the today only close. You say, Mr. Prospect, I'll tell you what. This is the end of our fiscal period, or this is the end of a sales contest, or we have only one or two of these items in stock, or we're just getting a whole load of new stock in tomorrow. And if you will take it tonight, I'll probably be able to get you an extra $25 off on this item or whatever it happens to be. Since this is our last item, or we're going to have a price increase. We had a price increase last week. If you take it now, I can get it for you at the previous price. And give them a very strong incentive for making a decision now, a reason to buy this minute rather than to put it off any longer. And finally, if the person's absolutely convinced that they have to go and shop prices, they have to talk to other people, they have to go somewhere else, then you use what is called the go-ahead close. And very graciously, you concede. You don't argue with them anymore. You don't try to get them to make a decision. You say, Mr. Prospect, I understand how you feel, and I think it's a good idea that you go and check prices in other places. But I want you to promise me one thing, is that before you make a decision, come back and see me, and I'll give you the best deal in town. Now, the person is now stuck. Because if they are one of these people who has to shop everywhere, they're going to go every single place in town, but in the back of their mind, they're going to be remembering that statement from you that before they make a decision, they have to come back and see you because you're going to give them the best deal in town. Don't give them a final price. Sometimes they say, well, what is the final price? What is the last price? You say, well, I'll have to talk to my manager, and I'll have to check with the boss, and we'll have to go through the books and everything else. So I can't give you that now, but you go and get the very best price that you can anywhere else, and then you come back to me and I'll give you the best deal in town. When they finally come back, they say, well, these are the best prices I can get. Can you beat it? If you can beat them on price, then by all means do so. If you can't, then you can put together a package which includes the item plus what you'll throw in plus the warranty, service, delivery, and so on, and you put it all up and you write it all out and you say, Mr. Prospect, this is the best deal you can get. And if he or she says, but that's higher price than what I can get it for over at XYZ Company. Say, Mr. Prospect, it's a higher price, but this includes the warranty, the service, the delivery, the setup, and so on and so forth. And it is the best deal you can get overall anywhere in town. Then the person has the choice of either buying it right there or then going back with your final offer and shopping that all over town. And then you say, why don't you give us a try? Why don't we wrap this up right now? What is the exact spelling of your last name? When would you like to have it delivered? And you go straight into another close. These are very, very powerful, and it's amazing, especially if you're in retail business, it's amazing how important it is that you have these walk-away closes, that you have the ability to say something to the prospect to get them to either make a decision now or be sure to come back to you before they buy it from somewhere else. The lost sale close, which is called the doorknob close. Anybody heard of this one? It's a very powerful close. It's after you've tried to sell somebody something and they obviously won't buy it and they are resisting you in every way and they've got a hidden objection, they won't tell you what it is. You finally say okay and gracefully you say, Mr. Prospect, thank you very much for your time. I appreciate it. I've taken too much of your time. I hope I can get back to you a little bit later with some more information on this. And they'll always say yes, yes, and they're happy. You're leaving now. Oh, thank heavens. Their mind starts to go to what they're going to do as soon as you're out of sight, and their sales resistance begins to drop like a thermometer on a cold day. Then you say, thank you, and I appreciate it, and you pack up your stuff, and you get up, and you walk, and as you put your hand on the doorknob with your briefcase in your hand or whatever it is, you turn around and you say, Mr. Prospect, just before I go, may I ask you one question? I've tried to present my product information the best way I know how, and I'm not very experienced in this business. I'd really appreciate it if you just tell me this. What was the real reason you didn't buy today? And invariably, the person sitting there, comfortable, no pressure, mind on something else, they say, well, I'll tell you, this is the real reason. And they will give you the final objection. And then you say, oh, Mr. Prospect, you mean I didn't explain that to you properly? Oh, that's my fault, dog. Got it. And you walk right back in. This will just take one more second. And you sit down, you open up your briefcase, and you start closing on that final objection. He says, well, the reason I didn't buy was because I'm really not convinced that that machine will produce the kind of copies that we require. Mr. Prospect, you mean I didn't explain that properly? We have a warranty and a guarantee that covers that. And if we could get you that, would you be willing to go ahead right now? And you just sit right in there and close again. But now you have no sales resistance. Very powerful close. And finally, closing on referrals. I cannot stress this more strongly. Every single customer or non-customer, buyer or non-buyer, is a source of referrals. And getting referrals requires a method. A referral is worth 10 to 15 times a cold call. When you get a referral, you are piggybacking on the credibility of the person that referred you. You can get in to see anybody if you have a referral from somebody who knows them closely. So when you are talking about referrals, what you do is this. The person has either bought or not bought. It could even be somebody that's bought in the past, and you go back and call on them. I have a very good friend here in town who is a very smart salesperson. In the first month of each year, after Christmas and New Year and everything, he goes and he visits every single customer of the last year. And he drops in on them, and he calls in, and he says, how are you doing? How's everything going? Having any problems? Anything I can help you with? Are you satisfied with the service? Is the product working out? He just does a social call, not to sell them anything. And if they have any complaints, he jots it down and promises to take care of it. If they're happy, he thanks them very much. And then before he goes, he said, by the way, we're starting off in a new year. Who else do you know who might be interested in this product or service this year? And people say, well, and after a nice 10, 15 minute talk, they say, why don't you call Bill Smith and so-and-so? I talked to him over the holidays, and they'll give you names and addresses and phone numbers of people that they know. In any case, this is the way that you get referrals. You say, Mr. Prospect, and this is a series of closing techniques. Mr. Prospect or Mr. Customer, however it is, would you happen to know two or three other people that I could talk to who might be interested in this product or service too, whether they take the product or not? Well, the person will say, yeah, I may know a couple of people. In other words, this is an alternative close. You said, would you know two or three? They'll choose two. You say, I would really appreciate it if I could get their names. And the person will say, well, call Bill Smith or Tom Jones. All right, you write the names down. You say, would you happen to have their telephone numbers handy? Now, they always do, because they'll almost invariably refer people they know very closely. They'll give you the phone numbers from their book, and you write down the phone numbers. And you say, Mr. Prospect, of these two, which one do you think I should call on first? And they'll say, well, probably old Bill, because he's just opened a new office and so on. And so, Mr. Prospect, would you do me a favor? Would you call Bill and tell him that I'm coming over to see him to talk to him about this? Now, you see, he said, yes, 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 yes. He said about five yes. Yes, I can give you two. Yes, here's two names. Yes, here's two telephone numbers. Yes, Bill is the best. And he'll pick up the telephone, and he'll call up Bill, and he'll say, look, Tom Smith is coming over to show you something that I just found very interesting. I think you should talk to him. That's basically what the conversation will be. And when you go over to see him, you go right past the secretary, they sit you down, give you a cup of coffee, and say, what have you got? And you're right into it. And it's better to do that than to spend all day cold calling, looking for people that you've never talked to before. If you get referrals properly and you develop a referral generating system by closing on referrals in each case, you will never have to make cold calls after the first 30 or 60 days in your field. You never should have to. If you're still making cold calls, it just simply means that you're not getting enough referrals. They find that in insurance, if a person can go out and talk to 10 people that they know, get five names each, and from those, keep getting two names from each one, they never have to cold call again.